Drop it, Dre.
Blog Talk Radio.
What up, what up?
Oh, yeah.
It's game time.
Oh, you get to go that route?
Yes, sir. That's what the DJ said.
I caught my co-host off guard, but that's okay. So we'll go ahead and jump right into it. You know, a little change that is always good, you know. So, of course, you're welcome to Talking Sports with the 12th Man. Today we're doing it on a special Wednesday night. We got able to fit it in. A lot of things going this week, but it is, of course, Wednesday the 18th. You are Talking Sports with the 12th Man once again. I'm Andre Peterson, joined by my co-host, of course, Jaquan Jenkins, as well as Robert Ford. I'm going to check in with both guys. We're starting off with Mr. Robert Ford. How are you doing this evening, sir?
Man, doing great, man. You got us hyped, man, with that little intro right there, man. That's what America wanted to hear right there.
I hope I got you hyped. You guys like, whoa, everyone's kind of passive-aggressive hypeness, but that's okay. That's what's up, Mr. Jaquan. How you doing this evening, sir?
Oh, man, I'm good. Yeah, you threw me for a loop. I was ready to get my AA and my five-knuckle shuffle on, but I like to change up. That's good stuff.
All right. Mm-hmm. Just for one night, we'll keep it on the original, but, of course, that's what we do. So just without further ado, we always like to introduce the show, the numbers, all that fun stuff, so we can get this party started. I know we got a lot of topics to discuss, especially right in the middle of March Madness. But if you want to call on the show, the number is always at 424-243-9519. We've been doing a fantastic job on the Facebook and Twitter. So obviously, if you want to follow us on Facebook, go to facebook.com/12thmansports. Or if you put in Talking Sports for the 12th Man, you'll be able to find us. And then we're also in the Twitter world. If you go to @12thmansports, you will find us as well. So, man, guys, we got a lot of things to talk about. Rob, I know we didn't get a chance. I don't think we're going to get the opportunity to do our 12th man NCAA March Madness thing, unless we kind of fit it in really quickly. But let's kind of talk about it, some Final Four predictions. And right now, I probably want to say 90% of everyone's brackets have Kentucky as the winners. I mean, are you guys kind of thinking the same thing as far as that Final Four predictions? I'm going to kind of start off with Rob. What are you thinking about this, sir?
Well, I mean, I think it's the obvious selection. But you know how these NCAA tournament things go. You know you're going to have about 20 upsets, but it's about who can predict the right upsets. And that's always the trickiest thing about the NCAA tournament. You know the upsets are going to be there, but where are the upsets going to come from? And obviously, if anybody can throw a monkey wrench in trying to win the NCAA tournament, try to pick somebody other than Kentucky and picking that team. But, I mean, I would have to go with Kentucky. Their athleticism, their size is I don't think I can remember NCAA tournament team with this kind of size and athleticism since I've been watching college basketball. I mean, I think it's an obvious choice. I mean, I would be shocked. I think the one team that could possibly beat them was Arizona. Arizona might have one of the best starting fives in the country. They might be the one team that could possibly pull off the upset in the Final Four bracket, but I like Kentucky to win it all. And also I like Villanova and Duke as my other two Final Four teams, along with Arizona and Kentucky.
Jaquan is like chomping at the bit, sir. What do you think, sir?
Yeah, and to piggyback on that, I've got Kentucky as well. And to go along with Rob just said, it's also their depth. They almost have two starting fives if they hadn't lost our Prothros earlier in the year. I mean, they can also bring in a whole another starting unit off the bench who can start for any other major program in the country. So I think that they can just wear you down by throwing bodies at you for the whole game. So I'm with Rob. I got Kentucky as well. I have Arizona as well in my Final Four with Duke. And I went with Virginia out of the East over Villanova. They struggled to score a little bit, but they play lockdown defense. And I just like the way that they play. I've got to catch a lot of Virginia games. So those are my four, but I've got Kentucky winning it all.
Man, I love it. You get everyone, you know, everyone, we are all on the same wavelength. I've actually got the same thing at Kentucky. Unfortunately, I submitted a couple brackets just because I think it's kind of fun. So I've got Kentucky as far as, like you said, Rob Arizona has been doing their thing. They're probably one of the best starting fives as well. We don't know about the upsets in between, but that's kind of how it shakes out. Jaquan, I got Virginia coming out as well. I know they have been playing stellar defense, man. They may be the one thing that can actually slow down the ball, and you know maybe they may cause some problems with Kentucky. I got a little shockers because I hate Duke so much, just like I hate Christian Leighton. I hate Duke. So I actually got Ohio State as kind of like you like how I put that in there. I got Ohio State kind of a little sleeper here. Just want to do something different. So that's kind of who I've got in my final four. So I just wanted to kind of change up some things too. You know, I had Duke going pretty far, and I had them kind of losing in that Elite Eight to Iowa State too, man. So you know, that's kind of what I have so far. But we'll talk about that too, guys. Too there's some other squads. I think I submitted two or three back. If I've got Arizona winning one, and I've got another one where I've got just a random one too. So that's what I've got as well too. So America, if you want to give us your thoughts as far as that too. We would love to definitely hear your thoughts as far as that. And to keep it going, too, I know, Rob, we're going to do a quick recap as far as Ole Miss. I do want to talk about some upsets to watch out as far as some memorable tournament moments as well, too. So, Rob, what do you think about that recap from Ole Miss coming back from BYU last night, sir?
Well, yeah, it was a heck of a basketball game. Anybody got a chance to see it? Stephen Moody, a junior college transfer of Ole Miss, man, first team All-SEC, really carried Ole Miss in that comeback, 26 points, an incredible performance. Ole Miss was an up-and-down team for most of the year, but found some light in that game. I still don't see them going too far. They're pretty inconsistent this season, and that's why they were 11 seed. So I do think Xavier would take him out, but that was a great game last night and a good win for Ole Miss.
If you're Hanson, you're like, congratulations, you win. Congratulations, you play Kentucky. So that's good and bad as far as that.
So, yeah, party on, because it's over.
Yeah
and, you know, the funny thing about that matchup is Kentucky has they're number one in the nation in defensive efficiency. I know we talked about, you know, they go 10 deep, 9 deep. They got 9 All-Americans, McDonald's All-Americans, that is. But they're number one in defensive efficiency. And Hampton is number 288 in offensive efficiency. So I think it's going to be pretty tough for Hampton to score against these people tomorrow night. I mean, they're 288 in offensive efficiency, and Kentucky is number one in defensive efficiency. There you go.
You talking about offensive?
Yeah, the over-under number is probably on 25 points for the game.
Exactly.
Oh, man. I love
Skip
it.
That.
Speaking of that, so, you know, let's talk about some potential upsets to watch. And I guess we'll talk about first round because we'll be here all day. I'm assuming that Hampton is not going to pull out an upset of Kentucky. That would really kill everybody's bracket. That would be funny. And actually, you know, it's funny. Whenever I submit these brackets, you know, you're funny because you submit your brackets and you're winning. And, you know, and sometimes you get excited because, you know, you submit your bracket. But then I get excited for upsets. I'm like, man, that's kind of cool because it's kind of a different shakeup. But in the interim, guys, Jaquan, what do you think? Is there any upsets you think we should be watchful for kind of in the first couple of rounds here, the first round?
You know what, I go to that Midwest region with Kentucky, and not that Kentucky's going to be upset, but I've got Buffalo with Bobby Hurley as the coach against the West Virginia team that struggles to score. And I know they're a sexy pick, but, you know, they have a good shot, I think, to upset West Virginia. And in that same region, I got Valpo over Maryland. And part of me is I know they shoot the ball really well, and Maryland's been up and down. But I'm going to go with them. They've done it before with Bryce Drew. Going into our other segment about most memorable moments, you know, they have that magic. I want to see if they can do it again. So that's the two that I picked because I think you have to have some, you know, they're going to be a 12 seed that's going to win. There's going to be a 13 seed that's going to win, and you're going to probably have a couple of 11s that are going to win. So you kind of have to mix those throughout your bracket if you really want to have a chance to win it. So those are the ones I'm looking at.
Rob, what about you, sir?
Well, I'll just to piggyback off of JQ, I definitely like Buffalo as well. They've won 8 in a row. West Virginia, best player, Jawan Staten, has been limping for quite a bit now, and West Virginia is in a little bit of a slump. So I definitely like Buffalo and Bobby Hurley in that matchup as well. And another 12 seed I like is Stephen F. Austin over Utah, 12 over Ooh. 5 as well. Again, Stephen F. Austin, I mean, I tell you, they got two players that can flat-out score the basketball. Thomas Walkup, 6'6". Jacob Parker is a stretch four. Even though he's at 6'6", he can stretch the floor. He can shoot the rock. I like Stephen F. Austin. They're playing tremendous basketball. I like them over Utah. Some other ones I even like, 10 seed Indiana. They live by the three, but I like them over Wichita State. Wichita State is not quite the same team. They're not quite the same team as last year. And so I like Indiana. Indiana can shoot the rock. They'll stretch the floor with the three, and I think Wichita State will have trouble with them. I like Texas at 11 seed. They were inconsistent this season, but I like them over Butler. Texas is loaded with talent. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to turn on a light switch. They're very athletic. They're long. They'll block a lot of shots. They rebound the basketball pretty well. If they can score the basketball, which I think they will against Butler, I like them in this game. Another upset. It might surprise a lot of people. UC Irvine, 13 seed. I like him over Louisville. Louisville has not been the same since Chris Jones has been out. And UC Irvine's got the tallest big man in the country, 7'6" center, Mamadou Njai. He controls the paint. He blocks the shots. Louisville will have a hard time without Chris Jones and their penetration and kick game. They will have a hard time getting to the paint with Mamadou Njai down there. I like UC Irvine. Another one I like, Davidson over Iowa. Davidson can score at will. I mean, they got four players on this team that can score the basketball. Tyler Lelinsky, Jack Gibbs, Jordan Bornham, Brian Sullivan. They can all score. They're a high-flying team. They run the court in Iowa. They have a very low percentage in both the two- and three-point game. They don't even rank in the top 200 in America when it comes to the two-point percentage or three-point percentage. I don't think Iowa is going to be able to keep pace with Davidson here. And I like Ohio State. I know Andre briefly talked about them. I like Ohio State freshman sensation D'Angelo Russell. I think a 10 seed, they will beat VCU. VCU is without one of their best players, Briante Weber. He's out for the season. So I like Ohio State. Some other games to watch, but I don't think they're going to win. Belmont, I think they're going to play a coastal game against Virginia because Belmont can shoot the three-pointer very well. They're 15th seed, but I think they're going to keep this game real close against Virginia because Virginia is turning the ball over at a high rate right now. So watch Belmont. Watch Eastern Washington against Georgetown. Eastern Washington can't play defense, but they got the best scorer in the country in Tyler Harvey. And so I think they'll be able to, if they can keep this game fast-paced against Georgetown, they even have an outside shot. And watch Wolford against Arkansas. Arkansas's best player, Bobby Porter, is in the middle of a shooting slump. He's also turning the ball over. So Wolford is another sleeper. And another sleeper, Georgia State, right in your backyard in Atlanta. I mean, he got some big-time talent on that team against Baylor. And R.J. Hunter is a big-time sharpshooter for Georgia State. He's a bona fide NBA prospect. And so Georgia State is another sleeper to watch. Hopefully that helps some of our average college basketball fans around the country.
Rob, definitely.
Yeah, but let me jump back in there.
JQ. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but I want to give Wichita State a little love because they still have that backcourt that has been part of these past couple of years where they made the run of Van Fleet and Ron Baker. So I've got Wichita State going over Indiana, progressing a little way. So I like their toughness, and I like the fact that they have a group that's been there before, so that stage won't be too bright for them. Another one that I like for out of the first round, I like UCLA over SMU. I think UCLA has gotten a bad rap here, and they've had some bad road games, but I don't think SMU is that tough. That conference isn't that big. And sometimes what you find, I think what we saw yesterday with Ole Miss winning, is that those teams in those Power 5 conferences are battle-tested. You know, they may not have the best record, but they play a hard competition every day, game in and game out. So you look at some of these teams they play, that we're going to play, they have, you know, 3 or 4 losses, but they play a lot of soft competition. Their RPIs are like in the 200. So you got to keep a balance. So I agree with Rob. I think it's going to be really exciting. It's going to be a fun first 4 days, absolutely, like it always is.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Rob, for that.
Very good point.
Yeah, I appreciate that too, man. So Rob, so I got Northeastern and I got Texas Southern taking it all the way, man, based upon your feedback, man. So, yeah, we're going
to. You roll with that one on your own. This won't be the year where 16 beats a 1.
Good
time. No, it will not be this year.
Well, let's talk about some good moments, guys. You put this in here, Rob, and we got to be really succinct, man, because the time is fine. We're having such a good time. But are there, I mean, moments that you remember? I mean, I go back to, like, you know, the Running Reds and a little bit of that, but specific moments like Tynus Idney, Bo Kimball, you know, shooting for Loyola Marriott.
Yeah, he already took a few of mine. That's okay.
I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead and finish yours, Andre.
But no, I'm sorry. I'm just thinking of all those key moments that kind of made the tournament, you know. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'll start. You know, Chase, you go ahead, sir. Kind of roll with it. I didn't mean to take your little moment there. I apologize. Go ahead, sir.
No, you're good. Tyus Edney was, well, I did 4 because I figured that, you know, we probably would step on each toes a little bit. I had Tyus Edney on mine, too. I remember that going coast to coast, I think, like 4.6
Absolutely.
Seconds.
Tyus was one of mine as well.
I talked to, Bryce Drew on the hook and ladder. Over Ole Miss that I referenced earlier.
Yeah. That's a great play.
Hampton beating Ohio State when Iowa State had Marcus Sizer and he was supposed to be all world. You know, I'm an HBCU alum, so seeing HBCU go with 15 over 2 was good for me. And on a personal note, I had Michigan beating North Carolina in my dad's office pool in high school, and I would have won if Chris Webber hadn't called that timeout. So that one sticks out for me.
That's another one of my memorable moments, too.
So those are my 4. So I'll let you go ahead and take it away, Rob.
Yeah, I have about 4 or 5 myself. Obviously, as a 7-year-old kid, watching Michael Jordan hit that game-winning jump shot in New Orleans in 1982 to beat Georgetown.
Nice.
That was probably my first memorable moment. Then, of course, NC State winning on basically a Hail Mary play with Jim Valvano running around the court with the upset win over Houston. And also Villanova upsetting Georgetown, Riley Massimino in that group. You guys already talked about Tyus Edney going coast to coast and UCLA beating Missouri in the second round. They went on to win a national championship that year, too. I mean, that's just how close they were to not winning a national championship, beating go coast to coast on that play. You mentioned you mentioned the Chris Webber timeout or lack thereof of a timeout. That's obviously a memorable moment. And UNLV running away, beating Duke by 30 points in the championship game. I mean, being a Duke hater, I mean, that was just classic. Watching that team just run all over Duke. So those are some of my most memorable moments when it comes to the NCAA tournament, which is definitely one of the best times of the year when it comes to sports.
Man, we should keep that going too, guys, because I think this is a great topic too, because we can spend some shows talking about those key moments too. You know, like I said, you had Bo Kimball with Hank Adams. That was memorable for me. I did hate Duke. I did hate Duke, but I'm kind of watching this I Hate Christian Leitner thing. It's actually pretty impressive. You got to give props to Christian Leitner whenever he hit that turnaround shot. Man, I was like, man, you know, that was amazing to see that particular
That's
part,
another
you know.
Big one, yeah. Forgot about that
one.
Big moment,
yeah, oh, yeah.
A big moment
Kentucky.
Remember that? Yeah, Kentucky, that was awesome. I think about certain teams, too. Like, you know, I'm kind of digging, man. I remember whenever you had Arizona, they had Miles Simons, and they had Mike Bibby and Jason Terry. That was a kind of a devastating Arizona team. I remember, and they were like Michael Dickerson. I was like, man, this squad, you know, you had certain – you realized that great guards were going to do really big things in the tournament, man. I remember, like, UMass, they had young Marcus Canby, man. And, you know, I just remember guards that were doing some crazy things too, man. So it was just good to see, you know, the tournaments. And you saw, like, the Dwayne Wayans kind of making their mark and stuff like that too, man. So just a lot of key things. And, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry, JQ.
I was going to say, and can I throw one team in there? 40 Minutes Ahead with Arkansas, with Corliss Williamson, I believe it is. Notice Richardson is the coach. Absolutely. Yeah. That was a very good one. Sorry, go ahead. When you said the names of the teams, that was when it jumped to my mind.
like I said, Rob, we can keep this going next week too, man. This is some good key moments because I remember there's we could just recite all kinds of different teams and all kinds of different moments, man, because it was just, you know, it's one of those things that you always remember too. And then, you know, maybe we'll talk about key upsets from a young Carmelo Anthony taking his team to the finals for Syracuse and the UConn great teams with, like, Rudy Gay and, who's a pudgy point guard? Was it Almeen or something like that? I remember all these different games.
Yeah.
It was just good to see those.
Almeen.
Yeah. So it just reminds me of
and
Kimba. So Anyway, I digress, guys. I will be here all day talking about teams. So let's keep that moving too, Robin. Let's keep that going to next week too, because we'll keep reciting that too. So a lot of good stuff here. All right, so we are going through the subject here. We're going to make a quick switch here. We're going to talk about some NFL stuff, if you will. Is it surprising, guys, about Chris Borland retiring from 24? Is that something that you guys have, you know, and I'm going to start this off with DJ, because something you think is pretty surprising, or something that you kind of expect moving forward? So is this going to be a trend, if you will?
I don't think it's necessarily going to be a trend with this generation, maybe with the next generation, because the participation level is down across the board, across the country in youth football because of parents not wanting to put their kids in for the sacrificing their health, especially the head injuries. But I'm mighty shocked after a rookie season, which he just basically stepped in for Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman and had a great season. You know, I was really shocked at that. You know, he's still on his rookie contract, so you can't say that he was somebody that hung around for a while and made his money and just said, oh, you know, I'm going to walk away. For him to retire at 24 is, I mean, it's really heady, and I can't fault him for his logic. But, yeah, I was blown away, especially when you know that he performed so well last year, and then with Patrick Willis already retiring, he was going to have that much more opportunity to be the man in the middle on that defense and to walk away from that. He gets all my respect for that. You know, he didn't let money trump triumph over his health, and you can't take that away from him. So very surprised, but I wish him all the best in what he does.
Rob Ford.
Well, yeah, definitely somewhat of a surprise, and I think the 49ers was banking on him after Patrick Willis abruptly retired as well. And but I definitely don't think this is going to be a trend in the league. I mean, there's a million or so people are dreaming of still playing in the National Football League and being in that position. So I don't think it's going to be a trend. I just think it's a personal issue that he's dealing with. And, of course, you know, having longevity in life is definitely more important at this stage based on his condition. And so it's definitely a smart move on his part. And but I definitely do not see this being a trend of players just retiring at an early age in the National Football League.
Good stuff, guys.
I agree. And then you throw Jake Locker into that, too.
Oh, yeah, another guy totally. Well, he retired for a different reason because, you know, yeah, a whole other conversation about that, too. I think this is an interesting topic real quick, if you will. I'm going to say, guys, that this is definitely going to – it may not be a trend, but it's going to change a couple things, right? It's going to change some contracts, right? Because now, you know, I don't know about Chris Borland. He's got that rookie contract. He's got it locked in for, you know, a couple years. Somebody does retire, what happens to his money? I mean, does he keep signing bonus? Or there's going to be things in contracts, I think, where if he decided to retire early or this, some NFL teams are going to try to protect themselves, I think. They're going to make certain clauses in contracts to say, if you retire early or if you don't fulfill this contract, you're going to be owed this much back to the team. So I don't know if you guys want to have any thoughts about that, too.
Well, I think the signing bonus you get, but the thing that's going to be tricky about it is it's going to be hard to put those clauses in because with that new CBA, basically the Sam Bradford rule where you can't make a crazy amount of money on your first contract, that I'm with Rob. I don't know if people are really going to walk away with that because the second contract is really the money contract, not that they're making bad money on the first one, but there's a cap to what you can get on that first rookie deal. So I'm not quite sure with the intricacies of the CBA, what they can actually do around that piece because, you know, they've already limited how much they can make anyway in those first couple of years.
Yeah,
the NFL a long time wanted to have the same system that the NBA had in place. And now that they finally have that, where the rookie salaries are capped now, as opposed to giving away $70 to $80 million contracts like Jamarcus Russell was able to get, Sam Bradford was able to get with their rookie deals. And the NFL, you know, for a long time wanted that same system that the NBA has, and now they do. And I think it's very fair, too.
Well,
good calls.
I think that it's fair to a point. Sorry, go ahead. I think it's fair to a point, but sometimes you have an outlier who's just going to outperform that deal. Like, almost like a Russell Wilson. Like, he's already been to 2 Super Bowls and won one, and, you know, he's making peanuts compared to what everybody else is making, but he can't do anything about it because he's locked in by the CBA. So I hear what you're saying. It's just I wish it was a little bit more flexibility.
Yeah, for those guys, and, of course, they get some performance bonuses based on the but it still doesn't equal to his value. So I totally understand where you're coming from with that one. I think he is in a position where he could demand a larger contract. And even Marcus Colson did this with the Saints. And, you know, Marcus Colson was a 7th-round draft pick for the Saints. And, you know, his first couple of years in the league, you know, he's making a 7th-round rookie salary. But he had over 1,000-some yards receiving in his first couple of years. And he actually held out for a larger contract after 2 years and was able to get it. So Wilson, I don't know if he was going to pull something like that, but I think he's in a position where he could get a larger contract and he can demand that from Seattle.
Yeah, but the thing about it, they just gave Marshawn Lynch that extension. And I was reading something. They said that Seattle, this year it was the first year he'll be eligible to negotiate an extension, but I think Seattle's trying to put it on the back burner now since they gave Marshawn Lynch that extension and traded for Jimmy Graham. So he might have to wait another year and fully hit free agency.
Yeah, they got enough money to do it.
Yeah, these are both exceptions to the rule, guys, right? These are both, I think, exceptions to the rule because, you know, whenever you see, like, Russell Wilson that's outperforming the contract, you know, every now and then, and then also Chris Borland, too, because Robbie nailed it right on the head. You know, there's probably 65 players that would take Chris Borland's place instantly. So, you know, that's kind of a tough scenario, too. Mm-hmm. So we got about 3 minutes. I do want to quickly get into Jameis is still a lock at number one. Robert's going to kill me if we don't talk about the mock draft, but I do want to talk about some key signings. The Cowboys and Greg Hardy, that's a good fit. We've got to be really brief about that. Raiders signing Trent Richardson, kind of a bust, if you ask me. But I know, Rob, you want to say anything real quick about the Greg Hardy real quick, and then we'll talk about the second round of the mock draft and the OT portion, if you will, sir.
Yeah, Cowboys getting the 1-year deal with Greg Hardy for about $11 million, a little bit over $11 million. Obviously, Greg Hardy is an improving pass rusher and can definitely help this Cowboys defense out. And they only give him a 1-year deal, so I like it. If you're a Cowboys fan, I'm not a Cowboys fan, but I think if you are a Cowboys fan, I would like the deal, giving them a 1-year trial and see how it goes. The Raiders signing Trent Richardson, I don't like that at all. And, you know, the amazing thing is I thought he was going to be a better player than Mark Ingram. Coming out of college, but I guess I was wrong. He's been a tremendous bust. And it's hard to believe he was the 4th or 5th pick in the draft. And, he's been a complete bust. And I think the Raiders are reaching when it comes to Trent Richardson. And you mentioned Jameis Winston. I think, yes, he's a clear-cut still the #1 pick in the draft as well. I think Tampa will be extremely stupid not to draft him. With the #1 pick, even though I would hope they do pass on them, being that they're in our division, but they would be stupid to pass on Jameis Winston.
30 seconds, JQ. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I want to add 2 things. I want to give Houston a little love because I love the Vince Wilfork signing to put on that front line with Watt. If you get Clowney back, and then that with Swearinger and Jackson Joseph in the back end and Merciless, that front seven, that defense is going to be nasty. And also getting Cecil Shorts to go with DeAndre Hopkins. I thought Houston had a good week this week with those two signings.
Good job. Rob, we got about a minute.
That's a great call.
For the OT portion. You got a minute, Rob. OT portion. Yes, good.
That was a fast-paced 30 minutes, America. We ain't having fun, I tell you that. I think we have about 2 hours worth of stuff we can talk about. But hopefully you all enjoy that fast-paced 30 minutes. Join us on next week. Stay tuned for the night of our show. We'll be getting that information out to you. It'll be 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. For our friends in Germany, that's going to be 5 a.m. Wake up and listen to us live over there in Germany. We certainly appreciate you all tuning in. We got an OT portion, which unfortunately we can't give it to you live, but click on the same link on tomorrow. We still got a lot to talk about. We got NFL draft. We got other NFL news. We got some NBA still we're going to get to here briefly in our 15-minute overtime portion. So please tune in and listen to it on tomorrow. Good night, people.
Good night, people. We appreciate you guys listening. We'll talk to you soon. All right. We are officially
yes,
in the OT portion.
Watch a lot of basketball.
So that's exciting. Watch a lot of basketball, yeah. I want to talk about two things here. Rob, I know you want to talk about your second round mock. Is this something you want to just recap real quick, Rob? I mean, you can't probably go in depth, but, you know, I know you've been kind of sitting on this. So is there anything you want to kind of focus real quick, sir?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, this is something that that we pride ourselves over the last few years is covering the mock drafts. And obviously, there's going to be some revisions coming up here in the next week based on pro days and things of that nature. And there's been some trades and things of that nature. But I think the last time we talked about the draft, we ended right at the Atlanta Falcons' 42nd pick and taking Max Williams, tight end from Minnesota, which Andre was extremely upset about that. But just some quick highlights of some players here that I have. Eli Harrell, defensive end slash outside linebacker for Virginia. Had him going to the Saints at number 44. This is a guy I think is climbing up draft boards tremendously. He had a great combine. And, you know, I can easily see him even move up from this position. Great football player, great edge rusher, extremely cerebral ball player as well. Another guy I like in this round is Devin Smith, wide receiver from Ohio State. I have him going to 45 to Minnesota. Even though Minnesota just got Mike Wallace, you know, they did release Greg Jennings, so they're going to still need some help at the receiver position. Get Teddy Bridgewater another weapon there in Minnesota. Another guy I like in this round, Paul Dawson, linebacker, TCU. I have him going 48 to San Diego. Can play the inside linebacker position in a 3-4 defense. He's a tackling machine. He runs sideline to sideline extremely well. He's another guy that I like. Cornerback from Oregon, got hurt, missed the playoffs. Ifo Ekpre Olumo. This guy was a surefire first-round pick prior to his injury. I have him going to Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly knows him well from his Oregon days. I have him going 52. To Philadelphia. Ronald Darby, another guy like cornerback from Florida State. Have him going to Cincinnati at 53. Daniil Hunter, a guy I know extremely well, outside linebacker, defensive end, LSU, extremely athletic football player, got long arms, he deflects a lot of balls. I have him going to Detroit at 54. Brent Huntley, QB, UCLA. I'm going to Arizona at 55. That should be interesting as well.
That would
and
be a
Michael
great
Bennett.
Pick.
Yeah, I think it'll be a little bit different from for Bruce Arians, but they're going to need a young quarterback there in Arizona. Michael Bennett,
yep.
I think, is a heck of a football player, defensive tackle, Ohio State. I have him going to 59 to Denver. And Lakin Tomlinson, offensive guard from Duke. I have him going to Green Bay. You don't think of Duke as producing good football players, but Tomlinson's one of the best guards in this draft. I think he can start immediately for any football team. He's very cerebral. Another guy I like, very versatile football player, defensive end slash defensive tackle, Florida State, Mario Edwards. I have him going to Seattle. I think he has the versatility that Pete Carroll likes in his defensive lineman. And, you know, that can make that team even scarier. So those are just a few names.
Yes, sir.
That, you know, in the second round mock, of course, we'll post it for all of our listeners and viewers to take a look at it.
I love all
apologies
the Ohio State
that.
Love. I'm loving it.
Yeah, he's loving it. Hey, appreciate that, JQ, because, you know, Robert, he's been sitting this for a couple of weeks, and he's been so excited about that, man. So I had to at least show him a little love, too, man. So there you go, Rob.
Oh, no, I love Rob and his stats. I love it.
Yeah, you can tell who the statistics of the show is. I'm just here to add, you know, color, clearly. But it's all good. Let's talk real quick. And this was interesting. I don't know, was that true that the Browns offered the 19th pick for Sam Bradford? Was that true? Rob,
I don't believe that.
Based on a few sources. But here's the deal. And reportedly, the Browns offered that to St. Louis, not the Eagles. The Browns offered the first-round pick But the Rams wanted to get a quarterback in return, and that's why they made the deal with the Eagles getting Nick Foles. I still can't see why a team will offer a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, somebody who's done nothing in the National Football League. I know the talent is there. He's got a strong arm, but he hasn't proven that he can stay healthy. If I'm a general manager in the National Football League, I wouldn't make that deal. I would take my chances on getting a good football player and wait on somebody else for a quarterback.
And agreed. And the other reason why I don't believe that is because if I'm St. Louis, I take that and I take that 19th pick and I put that with my pick. And if I like Mariota, I use that as ammunition to move up to go get him. So that's why I think that's just some stuff that they float out there to gauge interest to see if they can potentially make another deal or something along those lines. I take some of that with a grain of salt. You know, come draft time, you can't believe everything that's printed. You know, I believe everybody has a source that they can tell something to so it can get printed, so it can get circulated, so it gets people talking and try to drive up the value of a player.
Yeah, man, they're getting me excited about Michael Bennett. I don't even know that's happening, man, so that's a whole other conversation. But, you know, anyway, I digress. I had to slip it in there.
Hey, Mike. Michael Bennett's that guy.
Yeah, man, oh, I don't even know. So, but, yeah, I got you. It's interesting, too, guys, because I think 2 points. I think that, yeah, Chip Kelly's playing close to the vest. He is going to get Mariota somehow by any means. Crook, I'm thinking. I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. And, you know, Tim Tebow worked out for the Eagles, too. I don't know what's happening with that, too. And then finally.
Oh, that's hogwash.
Oh, man. I had to get that in there, man.
Not hogwash.
Man, Andre talks more about Tim Tebow than Van Camp's talking about pork and beans.
I think it's funny, man, because there's a way for me to figure out how to fit him into the show, and it came in. It's a natural progression. It was just awesome, you know. Anyway, I thought it was kind of cool. I want to talk. Is losing in free agency, guys, a good thing? JQ, do you think that's something that's a good thing? And we're gonna talk. We're gonna move to the NBA after this, real quick. Is losing in the free agency kind of a good thing? You think? Good.
I think it is. It's if you value a player at a certain price and a certain deal parameters, and they go above that, I think losing is okay. Because I'll reference Washington with Albert Haynesworth and Deion Sanders and all the stuff they did. They were winning free agency, you know, off season after off season, and they had nothing to show for it. So I think if you spend your money wisely, if you draft wisely, and keep your players in house, a Green Bay model that I really enjoy. They keep their players. They, you know, they pick them. They coach him up, and you keep him in house, and you don't have to worry about, well, is this guy coming for a paycheck? Is he all about the money? Is he going to come give me the best that he can give me? So I don't really think you need to necessarily win the off season and free agency in order to say, okay, we're going to win next year. I think you need to value your draft picks and build your roster from within that way and go about it like that. So I don't really think it's a negative. I mean, you can plug some holes as you see fit, but I don't think you have to go out and spend a crazy amount of money. And I'll also reference the Raiders this offseason. They had a lot of money, but they didn't really overpay for anybody. They had a lot of holes to fill. They didn't overpay for one player. They got multiple players to fill in different spots. And I think that's how you kind of have to do it. And if you have a plan, then it can work for you. But you don't have to make the splashiest sign in order to make it work.
The Dream Team and the Eagles, they did that too. Rob, what are your thoughts about that?
And yes, sir.
I totally agree with JQ on this one, and I would even just reference some signings from last year. You look at the prize free agent last year was Jarius Byrd. He signed with the Saints for a huge deal. He only played in 4 games, and so you know a team you're thinking you're winning in free agency, but you only get 4 games out of a guy. Look at Eugene Monroe, got a big deal with the Ravens last year, and I mean, he showed some flashes, but he went down with a knee injury after a big contract. And JQ are definitely familiar with Michael Johnson, got $18 million guaranteed from the Bucks, and they released him after one season. And Alex Mack, he signed a big deal with the Browns, broken fibula in October, only played in 5 games. These are some of the biggest free agents of last season. Lamar Houston. But, yeah, you know, the Bears thinking they're getting the elite pass rusher. Got $15 million guaranteed with the Bears. Tore up his knee during a sack dance, of all things. You know. Yeah, tore up his knee doing the sack dance.
Yeah,
and Brandon Elbert, another big free agent to sign in, got $20 million guaranteed from the Dolphins. Tore up his ACL and MCL at the 9 games. So those are some of your big free agent wins of last season. And I think we're on the same page with this. A lot of times you can build from within or make smart free agent signings, and don't go for the big splash all the time.
I'm going to say real quick that I was reminded of the dream team that the Eagles signed. Remember they had, Nnamdi Asuwa. They signed all those big-time names, and they were calling the dream
they
team.
They saw.
Like you said, yep. And so, just wanted to reference
that
real quick.
Yeah, they didn't make the playoffs, did they?
They didn't make the playoffs. Not at all.
Did not.
Not at all. All right. Good. Go ahead real quick. We got about 5 minutes. I do want to get to some NBA stuff, too, because we'll be talking all night. I do want to reference about the Cleveland Cavaliers. Can they win the title with LeBron and Dave Black's current relationship? And I want to talk about Charles Oakley on the state of today's NBA. Is he just kind of an old man, just kind of getting mad, or what about that, too? So if we can keep it to a minute for both of those, we can have some conversation, too. So real quick, can the Cleveland Cavaliers win the title with LeBron and Dave Black rock?
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say they're going to, I know they have a few differences. But, yeah, if you really look at the last month or so, they've been playing really good basketball outside of the game where they lost to the Miami Heat the other night. And but I really like the way the team is coming together. They got better as the year has gone along. And I'm going to say, yes, they can.
JQ.
And I'm going to say, yes, they can. I'm going to say, yes, they can, because really, if you look at it, LeBron is coaching that team, and there are fewer good teams in the Eastern Conference. So they don't have as much of a rugged path to a finals like the Western Conference teams do. The Western Conference team is going to have to go through some blood battles just to get to the finals. How much are they going to have left when it comes to play the finals? So that's why I worry about the Western Conference teams, because there is no easy matchup, from the first round all the way through the conference finals. Once you get to the finals, the Cavs have an easier path. So I think they can make it through there. And I think Black is kind of still learning on the job, but he's got arguably the best player in the NBA right now on his team that can be a de facto kind of coach who's gone through all these ups and downs with building a so-called super team, and he knows what to tell them, and they will probably respond to him because they've watched him go through that, and they can take his word from somebody that's not just blowing smoke. He's been through this process, and they're more likely to listen to him.
I'm going to say no, because I'm a Hawks fan, and I don't believe this talk about Cleveland. So that's my 5 seconds. Real quick, we got about 3 minutes.
He's going with his heart, not his head, America.
That's okay. That's okay. Charles Oakley is not a fan of today's NBA. Rob, what's up with that, sir?
I understand what Charles Oakley is talking about, and I think Charles Barkley, I've even heard Byron Scott say this too. A lot of the players in the NBA today are friends. They dap each other off before another game. They hug and kiss before and after the games. And, back in those days, man, they were out for blood when these teams played, man. You would have never seen Charles Oakley when he was with the Knicks. Or he wouldn't go shake Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen's hand. Those guys were out to beat each other and beat each other down. But I do think today's NBA is very exciting, though. I mean, I think players are more athletic. I think the big men, the power forwards, run the floor like deers. I think the game is better defense. And, I think you have better athletes in today's game. But I do understand what Charles Oakley is talking about. And I think he just thinks everybody's just too nice. And, these players today are just close friends. They go out to eat before and after the games. And, when they play, they didn't do none of that stuff.
You had a quick man, Jake.
Yeah, well, there's a piece of that. So the thing about it is you also have that AAU ball where they've been playing since they're 6 years old, and these AAU traveling teams in the summer. So they have a lot more level of familiarity with each other than those older players had. But I quibble a little bit with Charles Oakley because he was trying to take Michael Jordan's head off. But, now him and Michael Jordan are best of friends. And if you even try to push up on Michael Jordan, Charles Oakley knock your head off. So I'm like, okay, Oak, you know, I saw you try to dismantle this guy, and now you can't even breathe on him without him, Oakley trying to knock you out. So, you know, you got to take it with a little bit of grain of salt. It's a little bit more money involved now, and it's more media exposure. So they're kind of wishing – it's a little bit of sour grapes, I think. But I understand where he's coming from. To an extent, it was a little bit more rough play back in those days, and it's a little bit more wide open now. But, you know, they had their friendships, but I think they kept those friendships until the offseason. And when you got between the lines, there was no dapping each other up and shaking hands and going to dinner. You know, it was, I'm out for blood, and this is what it is.
Great show, guys. 30-second show. I'm going to end this, man.
Oh, we squeezed in a lot in 45 minutes.